Hello, welcome to the live book business webinar, Learn from Wiley's Legacy and Leadership. Thank you for joining us. I'm Noelle Skadinsky, Editorial Director of Book Business, the host of today's event. We have a really exciting and informative webinar for you today, which we are able to bring to you thanks to today's webinar sponsor, Aptara, a content technology provider to the industry's largest publishers, including Wiley, that's helping them profitably transition to digital. Before we get started, I just need to point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's webinar, and those of you who've been on our webinars before are probably familiar with this, but just bear with me for a minute for the people who are new to our webinars. First, if you have any technical difficulties, you can click on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know by submitting your problem in the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in the brief survey following today's presentation. If you'd like to get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, you can just click on the Download Slides button on the console. And if you're enjoying the webinar and want to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the survey button. And the survey is the one that I mentioned that will also be distributed at the end of the webinar. If you have to leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days starting tomorrow via the same link that you used to watch the presentation today. And then after the 90 days, you can access the webinar on the Book Business website at bookbusinessmag.com/webinar. Now let's get started. It's my pleasure to welcome Dev Ganesan, Aptara's CEO, who is working directly with Wiley and its digital strategy, for a brief introduction.
Thank you, Noelle. Good morning. Having worked with Wiley for over a decade now, we at Aptara have a first-hand knowledge of their approach to digital and how and why they continue to be the leader in this segment, representing a broad segment of markets, from professional and academic to education. Wiley is uniquely agile and proactive. These qualities are a direct result of doing digital right, and more importantly, starting with a comprehensive content strategy. Wiley's success in the digital arena is a testament to a leadership that thinks outside the box, isn't shy about trying new and innovative processes, and takes content strategy seriously. Wiley's leadership, culture, and production operations are a valuable model. Today's event with Will and Steve is a real educational opportunity for anyone who's interested in transitioning from print to digital. Back to Noelle.
Thanks, Dev. I'd now like to introduce our special guest speakers. William J. Pesci became president and CEO of John Wiley & Sons in 1998. He retired just a few days ago on April 30th and is succeeded by Stephen M. Smith, who was formerly Wiley's executive vice president and chief operating officer. Will has been a member of Wiley's leadership team since 1989. And during his career there, the company has consistently gained market share, improved profitability, and increased shareholder value through a combination of organic growth and acquisitions. Since he became president and CEO, Wiley has consummated three of the largest and most successful acquisitions in the company's history. Enabled by technology investments, more new business models have been introduced during the past decade than at any other time since Wiley was founded in 1807. Will is on the board of directors of John Wiley & Sons, the board of overseers of NYU's Stern School of Business, board of trustees of William Patterson University, the dean's advisory board of the Katsako School of Business, I hope I got that right, at William Patterson University, and the board of directors of the Association of American Publishers. Also joining us today is Stephen M. Smith, who officially became Wiley's 11th president and chief executive officer on May 1st, just 2 days ago, succeeding Will Pesci. So it's exciting and fortunate for us that he agreed to be here at this particularly important time and probably very busy time. Steve previously served as Wiley's chief operating officer, responsible for the management of its worldwide publishing operations. He joined Wiley in 1992 as Vice President of Wiley Asia and was promoted a few years later to the new position of Vice President of International Development and became Senior VP for International Development in 1996 when he assumed corporate responsibility for Wiley Australia. And in 2000, Wiley's professional trade business in Europe was added to his responsibilities, and in 2006, Steve became Chief Operating Officer of Wiley's UK business, and the following year was appointed Senior VP Wiley Europe while continuing his role in Asia and Australia. He served as COO for the entire company since May 1st, 2008. Welcome, Will and Steve, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Will.
We're really thrilled to have you here, and I'm excited about how much you have to share with our audience. I know that people have long admired Wiley for its leadership in all facets of publishing over its 200-plus year history, but in the past decade or so, particularly for its pioneering role in digital content initiatives. But I think there are a lot of things that Wiley has done that not everyone is aware of, and I'm excited to be able to share some of this information with our attendees today, and I think anyone in the industry can learn a significant amount from the innovation that companies employed in its various business segments over the past 10 to 15 years in particular. So I'm anxious to get started, so we'll just jump into the questions. So last summer, Wiley launched Wiley Online Library to replace Wiley InterScience, your online service for scientists, researchers, academics, and professionals worldwide to search for and access information online through a variety of access and purchase options. And in January, you celebrated the 10th anniversary of online books, which is now available through Wiley Online Library. Launching these services was obviously ahead of many publishers' forays into digital content. Can you comment on, was this the first product of this nature, and what pushed you in this direction?
Sure, Noel, I'll start. This is Will. Our scientific, technical, medical, and scholarly business, or as we refer to it, STMS, was indeed Wiley's first business to migrate to the so-called digital world, beginning in the mid-1990s. And for some context and perspective, I'll just provide some of the highlights during that period of time, beginning in 1995, when we launched our first web publishing initiative through the Journal of Interactive Surgery. That was followed in 1997. With a pilot version of what we referred to then as Wiley InterScience, our online business. And then in 99, Wiley InterScience was launched commercially. And the breakthrough there is we began to offer access to full-text peer-reviewed journals through a variety of license and pay-per-view options. Both the license and pay-per-view were new business models enabled by new technology. In 2001, we became one of the first publishers to introduce online books for the STMS market. Once again through Wiley InterScience. And then in 2005, 4 years later, the online books program provided customers with flexible access to nearly 1,200 books online. And then in August of 2010, we introduced Wiley Online Library, which completely replaced Wiley InterScience, which again started back in 1997. The point that I'd like to make about all of this is that these developments were market and customer driven. STMS was the first Wiley business to invest heavily in technology because online content is more accessible and more discoverable than print, and in the STMS market, that's critically important. And more than a decade ago, our colleagues in STMS began a mission of providing more access to more content by more people than ever before in our history, all technology enabled.
Okay. What can you comment? I mean, this was really pretty early on for compared to many publishers who were launching digital content, especially beyond just, you know, e-books or book formats translated into a digital format. So, you know, there's always obviously risk involved. Has the online books grown significantly in 10 years, and can you comment on its contributions to your bottom line?
Yeah, this is Steve. So Will took you through a little bit the chronology of our investment in, first of all, moving our journal content online through the launch of Wiley InterScience in 1999. And also made the very important point that our investments, both in moving journals and then books online, was really a response to customer demand. So our experience over the 10 years since the first launch of our online books program has been that not only have revenues grown dramatically, but also customer usage of that content is exploding. And that really reflects the fact that online books are so much more valuable to the end user, given the facility that end users of a library, an institutional library anywhere in the world, can access the book content from their desktop. It's more searchable, it's more readily accessible. So the value of that online book content to the end, to the final customer, exceeds the value of the traditional book content. And you know, we're helping libraries serve their customers in that way. So revenues have grown very dramatically. You know, we now have customers for online books in over 40 countries around the world, and we also see improvement in terms of working capital management, return on investment, as some of the inefficiencies of the print business, we can get around those and find new ways to provide customers with access to that content.
Okay, and I have some notes that saying Wiley's online library is now the second most visited academic website in the world. So you were talking about, you know, customer adoption, and if I'm correct, that you have you offer access to 4 million articles from 1,500 journals, 9,000 books, and hundreds of multi-volume reference works, laboratory protocols, and databases.
That's correct. And the data point that you were talking about, that comes from a service called Alexa Web Traffic Metrics. Whether we're the second or where we sit within that, and what's most important to us is that because of the greater access we're giving to customers, that's reflecting in rapid increases in usage. So we launched Wiley Online Library last year. Approximately 10 years after the initial launch of Wiley InterScience, reflecting the fact that whilst InterScience itself had driven much greater access to customers, changes in the technology infrastructure enabled us to make our content even more discoverable. And as I think many of your listeners will know, Wiley acquired Blackwell in 2007, and so the investment we made in Wiley Online Library was also reflecting the need to bring Wiley and Blackwell content together under a completely new architecture that gave customers better service levels, greater visibility, greater discoverability. Since the launch of Wiley Online Library, tracking usage, because of the better functionality of that system, we're tracking usage rates that are more than 40% higher than a year ago under Wiley InterScience.
Okay. With that kind of success, was specifically Wiley Online Library and online books used as a model for future digital projects that you launched?
Well, the first thing I'd say about it is when we sat down in about 1997 to think about how we would serve very, very observable customer demand to move our journals content online, this was a huge step for any company at that stage, early in the evolution of digital content. As Wiley always does, spend a lot of time thinking about how to launch that project, how to manage our content, how to bring all of that together, and chose carefully to find the right partner to launch Wiley InterScience. We really didn't have a huge degree of confidence about knowing exactly where we were going or how we were going to get there. We just knew that we had to make this investment at that time, but it was what our customers wanted us to do. And we put a stake in the ground, recognizing that the future of our journals business was definitely going to be digital. The experience over 10 years with Wiley InterScience, and then latterly with Wiley Online Library, has given us a greater degree of confidence in our ability to execute major technology projects. And so, with the launch of Wiley Plus, our teaching and learning online product and service for students and teachers in higher education, when it came to the point that we realized that there was an opportunity to serve customers better by moving our higher education textbook content online, we had experience, confidence, and relationships and capabilities and talent within the organization that gave us a degree of confidence. So I wouldn't say that because the businesses are different, that there's a model that can be taken and applied from one business to the next, but there are certainly lessons to be learned, and particularly in the way that you support and manage large-scale technology projects, that's a capability that's scalable across multiple businesses.
Okay. Just this year, you announced the launch of Wiley Open Access. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it fits in with Wiley's online library?
Sure. So Wiley Open Access is a new venture that reflects the fact that some funding bodies that fund scientific research are looking at new ways of funding the publication of their research. And there are some government and private funding bodies, notably the National Institute of Health here in the U.S., that are requiring that the authors of papers deposit their research within publicly open archives. And recognizing that the process of publication can be paid for either by the subscriber or at the front end by the researching body, we've launched Wiley Open Access in order to provide our authors and researchers with greater flexibility around how to publish into our peer-reviewed journals under different business models. So Wiley Open Access, the journals launched under that program are still peer-reviewed journals. We have recruited editorial boards, they go through the same processes. But rather than being paid for by the subscriber or by license, those journals are paid for out of publication fees that are funded by the authors or by their research funders.
Okay, with all this, all of these efforts that started back in 1995 and all of the numerous things that you've done since then with digital content, this brings up what's a huge issue for publishers today, and that is how do you change your perspective and your workflows, your internal processes and mindset from being a print publisher to a content publisher where you're producing content and not just, reproducing book formats in other mediums, but across multiple platforms and what internal and external tools, staff, leadership processes do you need to put into place to make this transition effective? And so can you comment on this transition at Wiley and kind of how it took place?
Well, this is Will. That's a critically important question and a very comprehensive question. So I'll take a shot at it and see if we cover most aspects of it. The first point that I'd like to make is that at our company, these changes have been evolutionary, not revolutionary. We didn't just wake up one day and say, okay, we're going to be doing these things this way. It really has been a process that began over a decade ago, and we've been consistently and steadily making progress. And in order to do that, and I'm pleased by this question because so often when people are talking about digital publishing, they tend to focus on the technology. There's a whole human element to this. The human beings who are at Wiley managing and navigating through this change, the human beings who represent our authors and our customers and our publishing partners, and we can have all this technology, but if in fact the people who are involved with it don't embrace it, don't use it to drive a better outcome, we're not going to make any progress. So there has definitely been a mindset shift at the company, and an example of that is just what it takes for people to move beyond the physical limitations of print-on-paper books and journals. I grew up in this industry essentially in a print-on-paper world, and when we started making these, and so have many others, and so when we started making these investments in technology, the natural human instinct was to put all this content on the web or make a digital book or whatever, but not fully taking advantage of the technology. Obviously, we had to move beyond that to benefit our authors and our customers. When we began the development, and another example of a mindset shift at the company, when we began the development of Wiley InterScience in the mid-90s, as I described earlier, some colleagues at Wiley thought of it as a project with a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's very typical in the print-on-paper world. An editor goes out, signs up an author, some manuscript starts coming in, production people do their work on that, hand it over to marketing and sales, it's out in the marketplace, let's move on to the next project. What we have found in the broad digital arena is that these are not projects with a beginning, a middle, and an end. When we first started investing in Wiley InterScience, I always thought of it as a new way of life that would evolve based on customer needs. That's an important mindset shift. We realized early on that we would not get this completely right from the beginning. So we accepted the reality that we would be engaged in an almost constant state of enhancements. We learned along the way, and I know this is important for Steve's point of view as it is for mine. All these things that we're saying to you, we have a lot of pride and conviction about, but we certainly don't want to give anyone the impression that we have this all figured out. This is lifelong learning, this world of digital publishing, and we're excited about it. We feel empowered by it. We feel that it's enabling us to do things that were unimaginable only a few short years ago. Most of our early initiatives in higher education, as an example, began with print, no surprise there. And then what we would do is once we had the print textbook published, we would think about ways to multi-purpose that content. So in so many ways, much of the development work was incremental to the print process. So we got the print project done, then let's layer on some technology. Those were in the early days. Today, right at the very beginning of the process, we're looking for multiple formats and multiple modes of delivery. And it's a huge progression and change in mindset to be able to do that, to imagine, okay, from the very beginning we have all of this content, we're going to format it in a particular way that we would think serve much of the market, maybe in a print-on-paper format. But before we do anything, let's also think about those people who may want a customized version, those people who need more interactivity or visualization, and that's where the technology comes in. So the word we all use, and you used it in your question, is workflows. You know, all the things we do around the world to deliver products and services to market, we've had to redesign almost every one of them, and we continue to do that today. We're not actually processing manuscripts or developing content in the same way that we did 10, 11, or 12 years ago, and technology is enabling us to do this more efficiently and enabling us to imagine, if you will, different ways to deliver it to our customers. There are also many examples of this in our professional and trade business. You also made some reference, I think, in the question, it's important to mention this, that we've acquired capabilities from other companies. And when I use the word acquired, I mean that broadly. We've established partnerships with companies that have technology that allow us to do things that we were unable to do on our own. We've acquired companies. Historically, Wiley's acquisitions have been content-related, acquiring more content in our three core businesses of STMS, professional trade, and higher education. But in recent years, we've spent much more time thinking about companies to acquire that would bring capabilities to us, enabling technology capabilities so that we could move along in this world of digital publishing. We've also recruited talent to Wiley from outside the publishing business. There's an ongoing investment we make in training our colleagues so that once we have them here, we run all sorts of courses within the organization to help people stay on top of emerging technologies.
Okay, you actually answered one of my questions. I was interested in how you mentioned the importance of the people and the transition and their mindset and their workflow and just, you know, thinking differently about a product from when it's conceived, about the different platforms it's going to be able to go to. And was just curious what kind of, did you have resistance internally? Or has the training really kind of helped everyone kind of make that shift?
Yes, well, a few things about that. And this goes back actually before I became CEO in 98 when I was in the role of chief operating officer, and we were just beginning some of these investments, is that we recognized early on that we wanted the colleagues who were currently with us, so go back to that period, 1997, for example, the people who were with us, we didn't want to create an environment where there was, this us and them, that is, you're the print people, and we're going to find a bunch of, digital publishing people. Now, that's never been a part of our thinking. We always realized that if we were going to navigate through all this successfully, we needed to build the enduring relationships we already had and continue those and invest in our talent to help them adapt along the way, recognizing that, of course, we would have to recruit some other people to help us. But we didn't turn our backs, so to speak, on the people who were here. We wanted to invest in those relationships and invest in the training. And what I would say is that, this change, it didn't happen instantly, and it's not without anxiety. Years and years and years, some people have dedicated entire careers to creating, marketing, selling books. You do that, and if you do it successfully, and you're familiar with it, you tend to want to keep doing it. That being stated, I want to be clear that every business, so I'm talking about the three core businesses, every operation and every colleague, and there are about 5,500 of them around the world, they're all in some way affected by this transition to the digital world. In fact, even as I use the word transition, I'm beginning to wonder if it's no longer accurate to refer to it as a transition. Digital publishing, print publishing, it's all our business. You know, it's not one or the other, and it has become the way in which we do things around here. So we're going to continue to invest heavily in talent development, new approaches in the way we acquire and develop products. We're going to continue to reinforce that there'll be ongoing shifts in the roles of sales and marketing colleagues. Steve and I have been talking about Wiley InterScience and Wiley Online Library. You know, before we launched that, we did not have a dedicated sales force for our STMS Journal content. So it wasn't just the technology. Once we invested in the technology and we saw these other opportunities like licensing content, we went out and recruited a sales force to help us do that. And so we developed an institutional sales capability that is not only valuable to STMS, but it's also going to be valuable to our professional trade and higher education business. So a point I would make about this is every step along the way, you get another view of the world, you get another view of the opportunity, and that in turn has opened up, new business models and new relationships.
Okay. Along those lines, the other element that's been important is technology and the technology that's enabled some of the changes that you're talking about. How did you kind of prioritize or decide what were your core competencies, what you wanted to handle in-house or acquire? You mentioned you acquired some companies that could help you do certain things that you didn't currently have capabilities for, as opposed to outsourcing some of these.
Noelle, this is Steve. Let me see if I can pick up on that one. I think Will was addressing this as well, I think. The first thing to say is that from the early days when we began to think about our technology investments, we were pretty clear that we didn't want to be a technology for technology's sake company. So there had to be a credible hypothesis about how our investments in technology were going to add value to the customer. And in order to do that, our technology investments needed to start with better knowledge of how our customers interact with our products and services, how they use them, where the value proposition lies, and how we address their pain points in their daily working lives, whether as academics or as professionals, researchers or consumers. So that really, I think, informed the knowledge that that all of our colleagues needed to be engaged in this effort to transition from print to digital businesses, and that we needed to leverage the deep content and knowledge expertise that exists within the company in the form of acquisitions editors and marketers, people who know their customer base well and who understand how a specific discipline or professional area works. So one of the key things that we wanted to make sure we developed in-house was that capability to think about technology investments, to think about the ways that technology could enable new business models, to keep that close to our pre-existing editorial and marketing processes. And the capabilities we needed then were less about product design and much more around execution. This whole area of content technology strategy is huge for any publishing business. Given the legacy mindset that people understandably came with the view that what Wiley did pre our investments in digital technology was publish books and journals, and so people tended to think about products as being books or journals rather than more flexible content or content formats, services, and other ways of adding value to the customer. So we recognized, for example, with the launch of Wiley InterScience, that we definitely needed to go out to tender to work with a partner who would help us to build What was a huge technology project, bringing all of our journal content online, making it accessible to customers, developing access control, but also searchability functions, many of which capabilities were capabilities that we didn't have in-house and knew that we'd need to go outside for. On a couple of occasions, what's been interesting is that although we've initially started by outsourcing this activity, we've ended up bringing it in-house, very often through developing relationships with our technology vendors and ultimately finding ways to work with them. So in the case of Wiley InterScience, our initial contract was with a subsidiary of Mitsubishi Corp based in the UK, with whom we contracted to build Wiley InterScience. If you think back to the late 90s, that was a time when some Japanese companies were running into some difficulties. Mitsubishi had made a decision to withdraw from certain areas of business, and it became pretty clear to us fairly early on, actually, in our experience, that they were not going to continue with the business with which we contracted to build Wiley InterScience. Fortunately, through a through the nature of the contract, we had clauses in place that enabled us to take on the engineering team that had been working with us on Wiley InterScience to bring them in-house, and we took over their offices in London, and that from around about 1998, I think, became an internal capability for Wiley that we've since been able to build on. Having that team in-house, frankly, has enabled us to perhaps manage that technology a little bit more towards our own, in line with our own strategic goals, to be able to use the expertise that came with acquiring that unit to manage other outsource relationships. So it's always going to be for us a combination of internal capabilities where it makes sense, and partnering or acquiring from the outside capabilities where we need to move more quickly than we could do by organic development.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned what happened with Mitsubishi, and I think that's a concern that some larger publishers have with outsourcing is, someone else having control of their content, and what if something goes wrong? And a lot of smaller publishers really seem to, they need that because they don't really have the option of, or even mid-sized publishers, of kind of building their own internal capabilities or acquiring something like that. So working with, an established partner who's been around a long time has been something that people have advised. But so aside from that, were there any other major hurdles that you encountered just through this whole transition process, and like maybe one or two major hurdles, and how did you overcome them?
Well, I'll speak to one, and then Will can add others from his memory banks. One of the things that I think we knew would be a challenge we'd have to deal with, but one that became more apparent over time as we began to build, not just to build the technology-enabled products, but also began to proliferate new business models. And I think you referred in your opening remarks to the fact that one of the things we talk about here is Wiley has originated more new business models in the last 10 years of its history than it did in the 190-plus years that preceded that. One of the things, we look at technology-enabled products and services as being a different kind of technology investment than the investment in the transactional infrastructure that enables us to continue to serve customers, to be able to provide them with access to content, to give them flexibility about what they pay for, how they pay for it, when they pay for it. Supporting technology products is different from supporting print products. So Wiley's legacy technology systems were really built around moving large quantities of books from warehouses mostly to intermediaries, sometimes to the end customer, but more often to booksellers, to wholesalers. To be able to support the different transactional requirements, the different business models that our customers now demand in a technology-enabled environment, requires further investment in upgrading, modernizing, and just making generally more flexible the all of those systems and processes that lie behind the wall, if you like, in terms of supporting customers with invoicing, pricing, and transacting business models. So that's been a hurdle that we've made quite a lot of progress, but we have a huge project ongoing at the moment to completely upgrade our transactional processes and systems.
Yeah, that point by Steve, just to support and reemphasize, if you will, the supporting infrastructure, broadly speaking, I think is one of the top two or three challenges as you're migrating from what was historically a 100% print-on-paper business to one that became some reasonable mix between the two that is growing more and more to being a digital business. And those of us, again, who have been in the industry for a long time know that a lot of our systems are, ISBN-driven. The digital world is not ISBN-driven. What you actually define as a unit or a product is very different. So what's happening in our case is that our business models and our ability to imagine them and to deliver them to customers went out in front of the supporting infrastructure that was responsible for accounting for it and, keeping track of it and all those other things. So we did a lot of what we would refer to at Wiley as workarounds. So having the infrastructure that helps you process all of these transactions and, is hugely important, and as Steve points out, we're making investments. The other one that I would add to this, as I think back now over some extended period of time, is the pace of change. And that's the ongoing tension, if you will, around trying to get out there at quote the right time, and there's no perfect time, but not overshooting the market and certainly not lagging it by too much. And one of the things I would say about that I mentioned before, but I think it's hugely important and want to emphasize again, we can talk all we want, and there's a lot to talk about with technology, but the human element of this is still a business of people relationships, and the ability of human beings to embrace the technology and use it to its fullest ability, that's what defines the pace of change. It's not the technology itself. We can do far more than we're currently doing with the technology that's currently available, but if no one's going to use it, it's of no use to anyone. And an example I would use with that, and Steve and I have talked about this, and I know we agree, if, tomorrow we could move much more aggressively in the digital delivery of educational materials. We believe that print-on-paper textbooks are useful for all the words and text that we are able to communicate to students. However, in a technology-enabled world, we can introduce much more interactivity, much more visualization, much more remedial work so that we can begin to realize the dream with academic institutions of recognizing individual learning styles that students may have. We have products and services right now which we're doing that, and some of our competitors do as well. We would love to have a faster rate of adoption. What is slowing that down in a way is, the human beings in the process, students and professors figuring out a way to utilize all of these tools to facilitate teaching and learning. So it's just the point of, in addition to supporting infrastructure, the pace of change, and that's not only how much technology is available, it's how quickly human beings can embrace it.
Okay. That sort of leads into my next question, talking about the pace of change and the legacy business. And can you talk about how much digital is currently contributing to the company? And, I mean, you're still publishing hundreds of thousands of print products annually. Do you see a significant pace of change in your print production business? In print being replaced by digital, have you already seen this, and to what extent?
Sure. So I could talk in general and then get a little bit more specific around some of the businesses. clearly the pace of change from print to digital is different across Wiley's three businesses. So the rate of transition from print to digital in our STNS business has been different from that in our professional trade or higher education business. And I'll talk a little bit about the differences, but the reason for the difference across the businesses is, again, it's customer demand driven. So in particular, our STNS business, our customers were ready to adopt technology, digital products, much earlier than they have been in other parts of the business, and that's why our early investments were all around our journal content and then our STNS book content. Overall for Wiley, digital is now is more than 40% of our overall revenue, and you know, we've put a stake in the ground recognizing that you know, the growth of the company is going to be primarily digital going forward. That's not to say that print is actually declining today. In some areas of our business, we are seeing print volumes beginning to plateau. But overall, looking at you know, our strategic plan period coming forward, we would still expect to see growth in print units over the course of that plan overall. And you know, that in itself brings some interesting tensions and dynamics because, of course, you know, we talked about the you know, the need to upgrade our infrastructure and change our infrastructure to support print products, but we still need to keep effective infrastructure in place to support print as well. And there's a certain degree of persevering in the middle there in trying to support the different formats and the different business models. What I would say about print book production, first of all, the production process for print and for digital really needs to be the same process right down to the very last step in the chain, and that is when you make the decision to produce the print PDF and go ahead and print. So our print production or our book production models are primarily digital first today. We manage that content in a different way to the way that we managed that production process even 3 years ago. And our intention there is to build in as much flexibility as we can in the production process so that we can serve multiple formats from the same production workflow. So whether it's to produce an e-book, whether it's to produce files that can be customized to support custom publishing, or whether it's to produce a traditional print book, as much of the process as can be the same needs to be the same across those multiple formats. I mentioned the fact that our expectations are that print is still going to continue to grow. That said, we have, I think, found ways to drive efficiencies in our print publishing business, particularly recognizing that in many areas of business, print runs are smaller than they would have been 5 or 10 years ago, and that the life cycle of a specific book product is changing all the time. So through the use of print-on-demand technology, for example, being able to produce optimized print runs of a small number of copies to meet demand, distributed printing, so rather than printing all of our books in one location and shipping them around the world in containers or, God forbid, on aeroplanes, we're now sending files around the world and printing in different locations, the same book in different locations, in order to manage our inventories more effectively, manage working capital better, and take some of the inefficiencies out of that traditional print publishing model, which historically has been, I think, very inefficient for our industry. So there will come a time when digital growth begins to outstrip print to the point where print begins to decline. Again, you know, across our business widely, we don't see print falling off a cliff, but there are clearly some areas where you know, print volumes will begin to tail off. And we're already seeing that, I think, a little bit in the higher education area, where the growth of Wiley Plus and students' receptiveness to buying their learning content online is beginning to have an impact on print. So whilst the growth that we're getting in print there is coming from new formats such as binder ready editions, custom publishing, and the traditional 1,000-page textbook published in hardcover is already beginning to see some decline versus a few years ago. And the growth of e-books, of course, which over the last year has been one of the most dramatic stories for our industry, is having an effect on some categories of books. And e-book growth, as we look at it across our categories, we see incredible growth across the board, but in particular in business and professional categories, we're seeing opportunity. You know, we're seeing e-books growth beginning to really outstrip the print business. So we'll have print for a while, but the growth will come from digital. But we don't expect to be out of the print business anytime soon.
Okay, I'm actually going to skip my next question and come back to it because I wanted to ask something related to what you were just talking about, and you mentioned the inefficiencies in the kind of legacy business of publishing. And as I say this, I'm reminded of, I saw a comment online that someone, I think on Twitter, had said, if anyone uses the word shift or transition in reference to the business again, they're, you know, going to scream or something like that. But there's really no other way to describe what's happening. I mean, and I'm referring now to basically the retail landscape, and, you know, timed with the changes that were happening in the retail landscape, timed with the recession, enhancement and growth in e-books, digital publishing, all of those things, people have referred to that as kind of a perfect storm happening all at one time. And during all of this, so you've mentioned a couple of things that you've done, changes in your product offerings, the custom publishing, the digital products, the e-books. Have you also made changes to your marketing strategies, the way you acquire products, and your retail sales and distribution model?
Well, yes, most definitely. And I think one of the key things there is really the extent to which we now have knowledge of the end user and their behavior. That a few years back, we were really we were relying on data about what left our warehouses and ultimately what came back and net of returns. You know, we would be able to see sales patterns and use history to project forward for new products. Today, you know, we can see not just through point of sale data, a lot more about sell through rates within retail accounts, traditional retail accounts. And all of the information we get back from both bricks and mortar, but also online retail channels, but also through social media, through interaction with end users, we have just a much greater sense of where value lies. And so strategic marketing and building customer knowledge back into the way we think about product acquisition and development has really been transformed over a few years. And the traditional publishing model of an editor sitting down with an author and making those decisions and then handing over to a marketing or promotional team or a sales team, we've not worked like that at Wiley for a long, long time. We've always had a team-based approach where editorial, sales, marketing, and content management production staff all participate in the process of what to publish, how to market, how to go to market. What I would say is changing most rapidly now is the use of reliable information, both quantitative and qualitative, about end user behavior and how our customers value our products.
Okay, I'm going to jump around a little again, only because we are we probably have about 7 minutes left here, so I want to jump to Wiley Blackwell. In December, Wiley Blackwell, which is the STM and scholarly publishing business of Wiley, it announced the launch of new mobile applications for select health science journals that would be accessible via the iPhone, BlackBerry, Android, Symbian, and other devices. Do you see mobile as a standalone revenue generator now or in the future? And if not, what opportunities do you see for publishers, including Wiley, in the mobile market?
It already is today a standalone revenue opportunity. I wouldn't say it was a huge contributor, but to the extent that the content or the knowledge that we are able to provide customers can be made more useful at the point of application, and health sciences is a perfect area to think about that. You know, imagine a doctor making decisions in real time at the bedside, if we can provide them with actionable knowledge, reliable information that supports decision making at the bedside, and what could be more valuable than that? I think we see mobile as being part of the overall mix, and in some cases, the revenue that we can generate through mobile may not come from sales of content, but may come from syndication or advertising or other ways of other business models. But we see it as part of the mix as we think about how to manage content, managing it for multiple outputs, including mobile, as and where relevant. And some of the other examples we could talk about away from the health sciences area. We, for example, publish under the For Dummies line, we publish iPhone apps, basic Spanish for dummies, selecting wine for dummies, all of which you could imagine being very useful if you have a mobile app that enables you to look up a phrase or to look up a wine when you're in a restaurant. The app sales themselves will be a revenue stream, but the advertising opportunities that will come from enhanced usage around that could also prove very interesting over time. So it's an area for us that we'll continue to experiment with. We see opportunities there, the more of these apps we produce, the more we'll learn about how customers value them and use them.
Okay. Will, I'm going to turn things over to you for a minute. So upon your, I won't say departure, if you're going to be staying on possibly as a member of the board, what are your proudest achievements in your 22 years at Wiley, including the 13 years you spent as president and CEO?
Well, thank you for that question, because I what I'm about to communicate to you has really enabled us to do all the things we've been doing in the print world, as well as the work we've been doing over the last decade or so with enabling technology. And for people who know me in the industry, and certainly the ones in our company, for my two decades at Wiley, I've been speaking with pride and conviction about this place as, and I refer to it as the place to be for our colleagues and our authors and our publishing partners. And I've always believed what we do at Wiley is a noble endeavor. Always been proud of that, and fundamentally, when all is said and done, whether it's a print on paper, book or journal, or something we're delivering to someone electronically, our mission is to promote knowledge and understanding around the world, and for me, that has always been a noble thing to do. I'm very proud of Wiley's culture. I believe we have proven that you can put impressive financial results on the scoreboard while treating colleagues with dignity and respect as human beings first and professionals second. I believe we've proved that we are able to adapt and change and evolve to satisfy the needs of the constituencies we serve, and that you can do all of that with integrity. And it certainly pleases me greatly that the next generation of Wiley leadership is homegrown. The company's 11th president and CEO, my esteemed colleague Steve Smith, joined Wiley about 18 years ago. Steve Moran, who is leading our STMS business, Mark Allen in professional trade, and Joe Hyder in higher education, they're all products of Wiley's professional growth and development program. So those are the things that, as I reflect on my career here, that I'm most proud of.
Okay. Well, I think that your efforts to create a positive culture have certainly been well known, and certainly in Wiley being named, among several best companies to work for lists, including Book Business's list of best publishing companies to work for.
Well, thank you for that.
And Steve, what are your thoughts about taking the helm at this point?
Well, 2 days into the role, Will and I have been working through, I don't want to use the transition again, we've been working through succession over the last couple of years very closely, and of course we've worked together for many years. And so I've had some time to reflect and anticipate the role that I'll be taking on. I can tell you that 2 days into this new role, the responsibility for taking over the reins and this incredible legacy of 204 years of outstanding publishing has never been in sharper focus in my mind than it is today. I am enormously proud and humbled by the opportunity to lead this wonderful company at this time in its history. People have asked me what will change, what will be different under my leadership than it has been under Will. I've always want to be quick to point out that, first of all, around the things that really matter, the value that we place on long-term relationships with our colleagues, with our stakeholders, our authors, our clients and partners. Will and I, you couldn't put a piece of paper between Will and I in terms of those values. They are shared values. I believe they're shared by other members of our leadership team, and our commitment to retaining and sustaining and building on those values is absolute. I also would point out that under Will's leadership, but also under the leadership of Charles Ellis, who preceded Will and who recruited both of us into the company, our company has had a wonderful track record that compares favorably against pretty much any benchmark, not just in terms of financial performance, but also in all of those qualitative measures of the success of the company that really matter. That track record should be evidence that strategically we've been on the right track. We've been getting some things right. So my emphasis is going to be on continuity. But I've chosen to use the word urgent to that. So urgent continuity in terms of continuing in the same direction that we've been traveling, but recognizing that our customers are changing and our market environment is continuing to change, making sure that this company is ready to face the opportunities and challenges that those changes will bring. So it's a great time in the history of our company. We have a new leadership team in place. We have a lot of confidence around our ability to build on the terrific legacy of the past. We know that our future is going to be digital, and we have a commitment that is evident in our plans for the business to continue to increase the pace of investment in digital technology in order to continue to serve our customers.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, so I would love to speak with you for about another hour. I'm sure you have plenty of time to do that. But on behalf of Book Business, I want to thank both of you, Will and Steve, for being with us today and taking the time to share your insights. It's really been an honor to have you both here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Noelle.
And, Will, we wish you the best of luck as you move on from your long tenure at Wiley and obviously, I guess, continue to stick around as a member of the board of directors. And, Steve, we wish you the best of luck in your new position and following the company as it continues its leadership position. I'd also like to thank again our sponsor, Aptara, for making it possible for us to bring this webinar to you for free. And I'd like to thank you, our attendees, for being here for today's webinar. And be sure to check out our webinar page under the Events tab at bookbusinessmag.com to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And before you go, if you would just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would really appreciate it. Your feedback really helps influence the webinars we bring you in the future and helps us improve things. Thanks again, all of you. Thanks to our speakers, our sponsor, and I hope to see you at the next Book Business webinar.